The hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Jill Robbins, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Novak.
A new report says the number and rate of abortions in the United States increased from 2017 to 2020 after a long period of decline. An abortion is a medical procedure that ends a pregnancy. The Guttmacher Institute is a research group that supports abortion rights. It released its latest report about abortions in the United States on Wednesday. The researchers counted more than 930,000 abortions in the nation in 2020. That is up from about 862,000 abortions in 2017. That was when national abortion numbers reached their lowest point since the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that legalized the procedure nationwide. About 1 in 5 pregnancies ended in abortion in 2020, the report found. The report's release comes as the Supreme Court appears ready to overturn its 1973 ruling. The number of women seeking abortions demonstrates a need for the procedure, said Sarah Rosenbaum. She is a health law and policy professor at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. She added that the report shows how devastating a Supreme Court decision is going to be for access to an absolutely vital service. Medication abortions, sometimes called the abortion pill, accounted for 54% of U.S. abortions in 2020. That was the first time they made up more than half of abortions, Guttmacher said in its report. The COVID-19 pandemic may have pushed down the numbers in some states, the report said. In New York, abortions increased from 2017 to 2019, then fell 6% between 2019 and 2020. 1 in 10 clinics in New York suspended or stopped abortion care in 2020. Texas saw a 2% decrease between 2019 and 2020 because of pandemic-related abortion restrictions in the state. Experts say the pandemic may also have limited the availability of birth control and other forms of contraception. It also may have prevented women from attending all the health care visits involved in a pregnancy. But abortions already were increasing before the pandemic began. One important factor is that some states expanded Medicaid access to abortion. Medicaid is a government program that provides health care to people in need. Illinois, for example, began permitting state Medicaid money to pay for abortions starting in January 2018. The state saw abortions increase 25% between 2017 and 2020. In neighboring Missouri, abortions dropped sharply. But the number of Missouri residents traveling to Illinois for abortions increased. Carol Tobias is president of the National Right to Life Committee, which opposes abortion. She said, "If states are paying for abortions, I hope they are also looking at how to support childbirth, so a woman doesn't think abortion is the best or only option." Guttmacher carries out the nation's largest survey of abortion providers every 3 years. Its numbers are considered more complete than data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The CDC does not include several states like California, the nation's most populous state. In 2020, fewer women were getting pregnant, and a larger amount of them chose abortion, the researchers found. The abortion rate in 2020 was 14.4 per 1,000 women aged 15 to 44. That is an increase from 13.5 per 1,000 women in 2017. I'm Dan Novak.
Until 20 years ago, the Penuelas Reservoir was the main water supply for the city of Valparaiso on the coast of central Chile. But today, it is almost dry. A huge open area of dried earth that was once the lake bed is now covered with fish skeletons and animals looking for water. The South American nation is facing a 13-year drought. Higher air temperatures have meant snow in the Andes Mountains is less dense. So it is melting faster or just drying up. The snow in the mountains once provided important meltwater during the spring and summer. The capital, Santiago, has also been affected. Officials there are making plans to place limits on water use because of disputes between the mining and farming industries. Amanda Carrasco is a 54-year-old who lives near the Penuelas Reservoir. She said, "We have to beg God to send us water." She added, "I've never seen it like this. There's been less water before, but not like now." Jose Luis Murillo works at ESVAL, the company that supplies Valparaiso with water. He said, "The reservoir needs rainfall and that it is just a puddle now." A puddle is a small area of water. He added that years ago, the Penuelas Reservoir was the only source of water for all greater Valparaiso. Duncan Christie is a researcher at the Center for Climate and Resilience in Chile. He said, "Research on trees suggests that conditions are drier than they have been in about 400 years. A 2016 study by weather scientists suggested that low-pressure storms from the Pacific Ocean bring rain and snow to Chile in the winter under normal conditions. That weather activity brings snow to the Andes Mountains." Miguel Lagos is an engineer and a water specialist. Lagos said the top layers of mountain snow are melting faster than in the past, or are turning straight into a gas or vapor through a process called sublimation. Normally, he said, snow builds up, creating new layers. This helps keep the area colder for a longer period of time. In 2019, a group of researchers from Chile published a study about the country's drought in the International Journal of Climatology. Their research covered the period from 2010 to 2018. The recent cause forces were affecting the huge drought in Chile. But they warned that heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere and similar problems will keep pushing central Chile toward a dry condition for many years. Researchers at the University of Chile predict the country will have 30% less water over the next 30 years. That prediction is based on mathematical models and historical data. Lagos said, "What we call a drought today will become normal." I'm Jill Robbins.
Ride-sharing company Uber has developed and donated a version of its software to help the United Nations deliver food in Ukraine. The system is designed to assist the World Food Program, WFP, in an effort to provide emergency aid to citizens affected by Russia's military campaign. Uber's software technology is designed to coordinate and follow the delivery of people and food in real time. The rideshare service operates in major cities around the world. The software version Uber developed for the WFP will permit the UN organization to deliver food aid in smaller vehicles in highly populated areas in Ukraine. It has been difficult for some of the WFP's larger vehicles to safely make deliveries in Ukrainian cities. The UN said the system will help WFP workers better coordinate requests for transporting food aid from UN storage centers. It will also permit the WFP to fully track the path of smaller vehicles and confirm that deliveries were made. In addition to food, the WFP also provides money to victims in need. If you're a Ukrainian living in a hard-to-reach part of a city under fire, the chances of the UN being able to get life-saving aid to you and your family are improving, the UN said in a recent statement. The effort has already resulted in aid deliveries in the eastern Ukrainian city of Dnipro, the statement added. The UN noted that the WFP's storage center, or warehouse, sits in an area not far from where Ukrainian forces have been battling Russian troops. The new system made it possible for smaller vehicles to successfully deliver food to other parts of Dnipro, the statement added. Deliveries using the software have also been carried out in other parts of the country, the UN said. These include the cities of Lviv, Vinnytsia, Kyiv, and Chernivtsi. Russia's invasion of Ukraine in late February launched an ongoing conflict that has left thousands dead and forced millions to flee their homes. Large areas across the country have suffered severe destruction. Matthew Hollingworth is the WFP's emergency coordinator in Ukraine. He said Uber's technology has improved the organization's ability to help get aid to those most affected by the war in Ukraine. Dara Khosrowshahi is Uber's chief executive. He said the company was pleased to offer the specially developed software to the WFP for free. He said the system is supporting a network of cars and small vans that can make deliveries to points within a 100-kilometer radius of WFP warehouses across the country. The WFP statement said it has been quickly increasing its operations in and around Ukraine over the past 3 months. It said that by the end of June, the organization aims to be providing food and money to more than 3 million people per month across the country. I'm Brian Lynn.
Our national parks journey takes us to an extreme landscape in Colorado. Around us are clear lakes, aspen and fir trees, and mountain peaks that rise over 4,400 meters. Welcome to Rocky Mountain National Park. The vast Rocky Mountains range extends from the western United States up to Canada. National parks in both countries protect many of the huge peaks. Here in Colorado, Rocky Mountain National Park covers about 1,100 square kilometers. Although it is much smaller than other western parks like Yellowstone, it welcomes almost as many visitors each year. People from around the world come to experience its alpine or high mountain environment. In the spring and summer, wildflowers burst to life, and many kinds of butterflies arrive. In the fall, the aspen trees turn bright yellow and orange. In the winter, deep snow blankets the park. Its peaceful alpine lakes freeze over. One of the major sights here is the Continental Divide. The area in the high mountains separates the rivers that flow into the Pacific Ocean from the rivers that flow into the Atlantic Ocean.
The Rockies' huge glaciers form the rivers. Glaciers help tell the natural history of the land. Over millions of years, glaciers carved deep canyons out of rock. Erosion from wind and water formed the mountains' sharp summits that we see today. Rock at the top of these summits is some of the oldest found on Earth. It was not until 11,000 years ago that humans began living in the area. The Utes tribe settled here for part of the year thousands of years ago. Winter was too severe to survive. When the weather warmed, they lived in the green valleys and meadows and near the lakes. In 1803, the U.S. government gained control of the land we now call Rocky Mountain National Park. It came as part of the Louisiana Purchase, which almost doubled the size of the United States. In the 1840s, American writer Rufus Sage came to the Rockies. He wandered the area from 1841 until 1843, spending time with fur trappers, Native Americans, soldiers, and hunters. His long and detailed account of mountain life was published in 1846. He called it Scenes in the Rocky Mountains. Rufus Sage wrote, "Further on were yet higher summits, surmounted by pines and cedars, raising their heads in stately grandeur far above the sweet valleys at their feet." Taken together, the scenery was not only romantic and picturesque, but bewitching in its beauty and repulsive in its deformity.
Beginning in the late 1850s, gold and silver rushes brought huge crowds to the Colorado Rockies. Miners arrived in search of the precious metals. They settled temporary cities. One of the best known is called Lulu City. It was settled in the late 1870s after miners discovered silver nearby. By 1880, more than 500 miners lived in Lulu City. It had a meat shop, a post office, and many houses and mining companies. Lulu City was short-lived. In just 5 years, miners left town, seeking other opportunities. Today, some visitors choose to hike to this ghost town, where they will find old cabins and remains of buildings. As more and more people came to the area, concern for protecting the natural environment grew. In 1909, the nature guide and naturalist Enos Mills began pushing for the creation of a national park here. He first climbed the towering Long's Peak when he was just 15 years old. Long's Peak is the area's tallest mountain at 4,346 meters. Mills made the hike 40 times by himself during his lifetime, and almost 300 times as a mountain guide. Mills wrote and gave talks about the Long's Peak area to urge Congress to make it a national park. On January 26, 1915, Mills got his wish. President Woodrow Wilson signed the Rocky Mountain National Park Act to make America's 10th national park. The Denver Post newspaper called Mills the father of Rocky Mountain National Park.
Today, more than 3 million people visit Rocky Mountain National Park each year. Many visitors arrive by car. They drive the Trail Ridge Road, which winds through meadows and forests and up the mountains. The road was built in the 1930s during the Great Depression. At the time, many of the Western national parks were served by the railway. Travelers arrived on trains. But a railroad never served Rocky Mountain National Park. The National Park Service described it as always an auto park. The high number of visitors and vehicles caused concern. In the 1970s, park officials began managing crowds. They started using buses in the park and created a campsite system in the wild backcountry. Today, conservation efforts continue. Park officials educate visitors and urge them to respect the natural environment.
Rocky Mountain National Park's scenery and wildlife attract huge numbers of visitors. The park has over 480 kilometers of hiking trails. They include challenging climbs up some of the tallest mountains and forest hikes that lead to the park's many waterfalls. They also include trails to crystal blue alpine lakes. One leads to Mills Lake, in honor of Enos Mills. The view of Long's Peak from the lakeside is one of the finest views in the whole park. One of the most extreme hikes in the park is the Continental Divide Loop. The 86-kilometer path cuts through glacial valleys and past lakes and waterfalls. It takes most hikers at least 6 days to complete. Long hikes give visitors a chance to experience Rocky Mountain wildlife. Within the park are hundreds of elk and bighorn sheep, as well as a small moose population. The park's huge number of large animals makes it one of the best places in America for wildlife watching.
Butterflies fill the park's meadows. Some of the most common kinds are the Painted Lady, the Arctic Blue, and the Western Pine Elfin. Butterflies help researchers in the park study the effects of climate change. Scientists and volunteers collected information on butterfly populations from 1995 until 2011. They identified more than 140 butterfly species. Park visitors also come to fish, bike, and go horseback riding. The animals are permitted on most of the park's hiking trails. You can ride in the park on horseback. You can explore on foot. You can sleep under the stars. You can sit by a clear, quiet lake. However you visit Rocky Mountain National Park, you will likely find, in the words of Enos Mills, the paths of peace and a repose that is sweeter than sleep. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.